I got an email from Rachel who's asking about performance anxiety and how that relates to the polyvagal theory. Before I get into it, hi, I am Justin Sinceri. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, a coach, and the creator of the Polyvagal Trauma Relief System. Welcome to Stuck Not Broken, where I teach you how to live with more calm, confidence, and connection without psychobabble or woo-woo. If you have no idea what the polyvagal theory is, that's okay. I have a very deep dive for you. It's a 9-episode, basically like course on the polyvagal theory, all the essentials in simple language. That's in the description. Just click that and you'll be able to start those 9 episodes for free. No email address, nothing. Just have at it, learn, hope you enjoy it. But let's get to Rachel's email here. She says, a topic I really think would be of interest to me. Oh, and by the way, so she responded to an email I had sent out saying, hey, what do you want to know about? And this is what she wrote back with. A topic I really think would be of interest to me, if you haven't already covered it, is performance anxiety. For example, the other day I played a piano jazz piece on Zoom before 40 other students, including our jazz piano teacher. My hands shook so much from stage fright that it made it quite difficult to play. What's a good approach to use polyvagal theory for this? A couple things here that I need to address. The first one is, she's asking, what's a good approach to use polyvagal theory for this? Polyvagal theory, and I don't know if she meant this or not, but polyvagal theory is not a modality. It's not a prescription. It doesn't say doesn't exactly say what you should do, how you should handle things, what your behaviors should be. I think it says it helps us understand how to optimize ourselves on a biological level, nervous system level. It can help us to feel more safety, more connection. I think there's principles that we can pull from maybe, but in no way is it telling us or how to do things, or in no way is it saying like, here's a prescription for, you know, how you should behave. People like me, so I've taken my understanding of the science of the polyvagal theory and then pulled from it and applied it to my own understandings of mental health and trauma recovery as a therapist, and then created my system. But the polyvagal theory is just science. Like, it's just explaining what's happening within us on a biological level when we do things like hug each other, but also when we do things like have stage fright while playing piano and on a Zoom call. Polyvagal theory doesn't say what to do. It says, hey, here's what's happening. I can explain this. The science is saying, I can explain this. So on that note, what I want to focus on next is what's happening. And I can't speak for Rachel. I don't know what's happening within her, but I can speak on a more general level. This actually happened to my daughter. She plays piano, and this happened to her at her last recital. And she got up there, and same thing happened to her. It wasn't on Zoom. It was in front of 50 people or so. She was up there and her hands started shaking, and I was up there kind of close to where I was filming on my camera, and you could see her tense up and her hands started shaking, and she got through it, but you could tell she was really struggling. So what's happening on a nervous system level, on the polyvagal level, what's happening is that likely the body, the person, the individual, the organism is losing access to their safety state. When we lose access to the safety state, then our defensive states kind of become dominant. We become dysregulated. So without the safety state active, flight, fight, shutdown, freeze, those become more dominant. They start to flavor the systems. They flavor our thoughts, our behaviors, or at least the potential of what the range of our thoughts and behaviors and emotions, our ability to connect with others, our ability to perform in front of others on piano, restricted. When we're in flight fight, we want to run away or be aggressive. When we are in shutdown, we collapse and have this pull toward immobility and isolation and lower stimulation. When we're in freeze, we tense up. So what I think happens, and I can kind of relate to this on some level, actually I can relate to this on a pretty big level. I don't like heights very much, especially when I'm in my car. The car and heights, bridges, not being able to see the ground and just seeing like blue sky on a steep bridge, or a drop off when you're driving on a cliff and you see that drop, that puts me into a little freeze. Yeah, cars, heights, not a good combination for me. So what I saw in my daughter, and I think in general, when we see these kinds of things, what's likely happening is the individual's losing access to their safety state, and they're probably entering kind of a freeze. The shaking, the hand shaking is potentially the freeze itself or the body's attempt to come out of freeze and trying to like shake it off. I'm not quite sure which it is for that individual, but it could kind of like be either of those. But in general, what's probably happening with that muscle tension and the shaking is likely a freeze state. Shutdown would be passing out at the extreme. Shutdown would be dissociation. Now, part of freeze is shutdown. Freeze is a combination of flight, fight, plus shutdown. What's happening is the body is mobilized to run away or fight, but also immobilizing in shutdown. And that's what equals freeze. Freeze is a mixed state. It's a combination of flight, fight, plus shutdown. So freeze is immobile, but with flight, fight in the system. It's like hitting the accelerator and the brake at the same time in your car. You know, the engine's revving, but it's not going anywhere. The wheels are just kind of spinning. So that might be that, you know, that handshaking, the tension, not being able to focus, possibly a little bit of or a lot of dissociation happening. That's likely a freeze reaction. So why does this happen? It could be a number of things. The first one, it could be just the moment itself is a big moment. It's, you know, you're performing in front of a bunch of people. You might have a lot of pressure on you. You might have familial expectations. You might have cultural expectations. You might have a teacher who's been driving you up until this moment. Now it's all on you. The pressure might be too much. So maybe it's just the moment. The moment's too big. That could be one aspect of it. Another aspect could be that if you're playing in front of other people who are kind of staring blankly or lost interest, all of those cues of like crowd chatter, not looking at you, not having smiles on their face. All those cues actually send danger cues basically to the person up there who's probably already tense and feeling pressured. And then they see these faces in the crowd that are first off strangers, but second off not friendly, not warm, not inviting. All of those give, or maybe disinterested, flat out disinterested, probably not angry and aggressive, but disinterested or, you know, chit-chattering with their own kids and they want to leave. All of those cues, those interpersonal cues, actually bring they give some danger cues. We receive those interpersonal cues kind of like danger. It's not really danger, but our body perceives it or detects it as dangerous through something called neuroception. Again, listen to my 9-episode series to learn more about that. Okay, so part of this could be the moment. Part of it could be the danger cues that you're getting from the individual or from the crowd, the lack of interpersonal cues. Now, on top of that, if you're doing something like a performance or maybe a presentation and you're doing it through Zoom or through virtual means, you're alone. You're just talking to a screen. Yeah, there's faces there and it kind of helps as long as they're engaged, but a lot of them might just be black screens with the name on it maybe, but it's you're alone. And you're talking into the void, kind of like I'm doing right now. Like you're hearing it, but I'm just talking to myself. It's not exactly a mindful safety practice. You know what I mean? Like it's weird. So if you're doing this, even though there are live people watching, they're not there with you. They're not, you can't maybe hear their voice giving you encouragement. You can't, I don't know, reach out and hug someone that might otherwise comfort you. There's the pressure of the moment. There's the audience not giving their interpersonal cues, but then there's also just being alone with a screen. Even though there's people on the other end of it in a way, there's also like you're alone with a screen. So all of these could not, maybe not one of these could trigger the freeze, but all these combined could trigger the freeze. On top of this, whatever you have around you could trigger it as well. So we've talked about the moment itself, the expectations, personal and maybe on a bigger level. We've also talked about the interpersonal cues or lack of cues, but there's also environmental stuff going on around you. Again, like if you're on a Zoom call, are you in a space that you actually feel good in? Are you in a space you actually feel some level of safety, connection, and groundedness in? Or are you performing in front of a bunch of people in a church or a community center where it's not your space? You don't own it. You don't feel comfortable there. You don't set the lighting. You don't set the temperature. You don't have control over the space like that. So that in itself can be dysregulating as well. Maybe there's something there that you didn't plan on and it just, you know, it causes some anxiety that contributes to the freeze. I know for my daughter, the first time she did it, she has a piano. She practices on piano, but they gave her this keyboard slash piano hybrid thing, and it threw her off. That was the first time, and she got through it. She was fine. But the second time, she knew that was going to happen, and she had practiced on a keyboard, and that might have like added the pressure to it. So not having control of the environment, not being able to choose your, I don't know, method of delivery or all the pieces of the environment, might not be enough to trigger you into dysregulation, but it might contribute to it. So what do you do about this? The first thing is, I think it's in general, we'll talk in general. In general, to address freeze, for any level of dysregulation, flight, fight, shutdown, freeze, it's helpful to develop the strength of your safety state. That means you prioritize feelings of connection, being grounded in the present moment, mindfulness, experience of mindfulness, interpersonal connections, connections with yourself, connections with your environment. If you prioritize feeling safe, then that can help you to strengthen your safety state. That doesn't mean that everybody does what you want. That's not what that means. What that means is you look inward and you notice, what do I feel a pull towards? What feels generally like feelings of positivity? What feels like connection? What feels like freedom or being grounded in the present moment? You know what I mean? That's what we're aiming for. When you feel connected to your pet, that's a lot different than feeling protected by hiding in your room in the dark by yourself. That's not safety. Connection with your pet, that's more what I'm talking about. Connection with yourself, using your senses, that's more what I'm talking about. Connection with a loved one, if you have it. Connection with a professional, like a therapist, that's more what I'm talking about. Those are those safety experiences that we want to first off identify, practice, mindfully experience it, and build the strength of your safety state. And then, as you do that, then allow some level of dysregulation, or not dysregulation, but some level of defensive activation. So if you know you're stuck in a defensive state, a flight fight state, if you know you're stuck in freeze or shutdown, anchor in safety and then allow yourself to feel a little bit, a tolerable amount of those defensive states. As you do that, it actually helps to strengthen your safety state. It softens the intensity of the defensive state, and over time it can significantly reduce to the point where it's not debilitating and you actually may just flat out recover from it. The other thing that can help more specifically for something like this is to know what you're walking into, to know what the environment is going to be like, to know what tools you'll have at your disposal. So knowing what kind of keyboard or piano it is ahead of time, that might help. Knowing who's going to be there, knowing how many people are going to have their cameras on or off. When I do my trauma presentations, a lot of times they've been through virtual, through Zoom. I prefer to see people's faces. I ask people to leave their cameras on. So what are you walking into? What kind of piano is there? How many seats are there? What's the lighting like? Can you ask people to turn their cameras on or off? Can you set up your environment? Let's say you are doing a Zoom thing. Can you set up your literal home environment with cues of safety? Like right now I'm recording this. I'm mostly surrounded by things that bring me calm cues of safety, connection. Like I have stuff back here like Lego and 49er stuff and polyvagal theory books. There's stuff that I like. It just kind of helps me feel good, you know? The light back here, it feels soft and warm. I like that kind of lighting. There is kind of a mess that you can't see, which I don't like, but just generally, when you do these things, what's your environment like? What can you control? What can you change? And if you can't, can you introduce your system to that ahead of time so that it's not a surprise when you get there the day of? There might also be some top-down stuff you can do to help yourself out. Like if you know you're going to go into freeze, maybe you can tell yourself ahead of time, hey, I'm safe. I've rehearsed this, I can do this, I'm competent. People are here because they're interesting, or people are here because they are excited about my talents or my knowledge, my speaking ability, whatever it is. Can you tell yourself something top down that can help you to regulate? A slow exhale on the way out, that can be helpful. I don't like prescribed breathing too much, but when it comes to freeze, it seems like the slow exhale on the way out is helpful. A lot of times with my therapy clients, when they get in that kind of tense, anxious flight, fight, or even like freeze energy, I'll ask them, hey, can you breathe? And that prompts them. And they'll be like, oh yeah. And then they'll look inward. They'll take that breath in and out. And having that bigger breath than not is, I think, helpful, especially if you can exhale a little bit slower on the way out. That helps to activate the safety state. And then also, like, of course, just practice. Make sure you have whatever that thing is, have it down. Have it down as much as you possibly can. When I first started doing my trauma presentations and my polyvagal theory presentations, I made sure that I rehearsed it a number of times to ensure that it fit within the allotted time window. I allowed breaks in my speaking for Q&A. So rehearse the heck out of it and make sure you have it, especially maybe with like sports or piano stuff. Like, that muscle memory can go a long way. So just make sure you got that down. If you can combine that with the other things that I've recommended, the potential for going into a dysregulated free state are probably lower overall, I would say. But I don't know you, so you'll have to figure out ultimately for yourself what helps you feel safe, what helps you feel more grounded, what helps you feel more confident. Those are just my ideas. I would love to hear what you think. Put them in the comments if you don't mind. That's it for this one. Thank you, Rachel, for being on my email list and for this question. If you're interested in working with me, not Rachel, not you, but just in general, if you're interested in working with me as your coach, I do have availability right now. I opened up a whole bunch of new slots because my private practice is growing, and so I've created more time for it. So if you're interested in coaching with me or therapy, let me know and we can discuss what that might look like. My email is justinlmft@gmail.com. Again, justinlmft@gmail.com. Bye.
This podcast is not therapy, not intended to be therapy or be a replacement for therapy. Nothing in this creates or indicates a therapeutic relationship. Please consult with your therapist or seek for one in your area if you are experiencing mental health symptoms. Nothing in this podcast should be construed to be specific life advice. It is for educational and entertainment purposes only. More resources are available in the description of this episode and in the footer of justinlmft.com.